actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift drink and hanging with people you just did battle with should never be taken away. But I mean, what's wrong with like calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to, like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the School of Hard Knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Welcome to Mama Food Pod, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran, star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your mise en place. Here are the Good Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Happy May 12th, everybody.
Woo!
May 12th, it's Cinco de Mayo was last Thursday. This is now Cinco day 12-0. What
don't
a fucking
say.
Train wreck that
don't
was
say,
last
yeah,
week.
Don't say.
That was crazy,
was it a train,
Dan.
It was a roller coaster ride of eventful situations that were unpredictable.
There was a lot of unpredictability in there, that's for sure. But the one thing that did come out of there that was incredible was...
Hello, this is Jose Heineken.
And ladies and gentlemen, I am happy to say and proud to bring back to the show. However, I thought we lost him again, fully cured from his case of the sour tummy. Chef Jeffy's back. Jeffy, shout out to you, Jeffy. Shout out to you, Jeffy.
Yes, Jeff. Welcome.
I was here last week, guys.
Welcome.
Shout out to you, Jeffy. We're so glad that was Soundboard Jeff last week. We didn't actually have you.
No, I was here. I was. We did a video of me at the end.
No, that was Soundboard Jeff.
I was in bed.
We have a soundboard of you that we play when you're not here. I thought we had you tonight for a little bit.
We had Dave with a wig on in bed playing.
What?
That's right. But Jeffy. Dan, let's give it up for him. Shout out to Jeff. He beat Sour Jeff. Tummy. We're excited for you, Jeffy.
Woo!
Really Jeff. Happy for you. Really
Jeff
happy
the
for
greatest,
you. He
greatest
almost didn't make it tonight when he finally got on the Skype. I was like,
what?
He doesn't have Sour Tummy anymore?
What?
Doesn't hurt?
What?
No more disease?
What?
No more things melting?
What?
Things breaking off his body?
What?
Nothing bad?
What?
No Sour Tummy?
What?
Diarrhea?
What?
Colon blow?
What?
Nope, he was back to normal. It was so fun.
Oh, this is Jose Heineken.
I can't. That guy was the best. So, Jeffy, hey. We're happy you're back. Did he hang up on us? He might have hung
super
up.
Super happy to be back.
Hey, we got amazing a great show tonight, man. We got a chef on here who I've been excited to talk to since we met at Sun Food and Wine Festival back in January. Chef Lamar Moore is going to be joining the show here in a little bit, boys. Excited about that.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really good time. Really good time. Great dude. Doing big things out there in Chicago. Excited to hear him. Super positive cat, too.
Hell yeah. Can't wait to talk to him a little bit. And Dan, I know you were excited to talk to him, too.
Hell yeah. I want to talk about what he does for his community and stuff like that. I think that thing is big, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to him, too. But, boys, before we get to Lamar, we got a little housekeeping to do here. And I got to tell you something, man. Restaurant Road Trip, as you all know, we mentioned enough on this program, launched a couple weeks ago, and it's doing very, very well, at least from what I can
Woo!
Tell. But the good news is that we are moving along. Today's episode with El Segundo in South Norwalk, Connecticut, Norwalk. Featuring Chef Carlos Baez. He does street food from all across the world, global street food. One of my favorite episodes. My favorite part about the whole thing, though, is I really kept stuff in my face, and the whole place is decorated in graffiti and street art, kind of the entire... It looks beautiful.
Yep.
But the episode ends... with myself getting painted just to look like the walls, which I thought was pretty funny. It's one of my favorites. because I just wouldn't stop shoving my face like a fat kid, which, you know, insert joke here. But great episode, though, Dan. You watched that one yet?
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. I'm a fan of you, man. You do it big. That's... You have a good time, and you make people laugh, and I think that's great. And, you know, I love being a part of it.
Dan, awesome. You're the best. Jeffy, see, this is what I'm talking about. I always build people up and say nice things, Jeffy. Jeffy's never said one nice thing about me to anybody. But you do, Dan. I appreciate that.
Jeff says a lot of nice things about you to me. He just tells me not to tell you about it.
Yeah, figures.
Yeah. He talks I don't like gassing wife. You. I don't like getting you too gassed up. Exactly. Me and your wife have a plan. We got to keep you humble.
See, sometimes I need that, though, because I'm a Pisces. When I get down, I get down.
You got plenty of people that gas you all over the place. All you gotta do, anytime you go anywhere, go on your Instagram. People are always telling you, oh, Plum, you're the greatest. Everybody loves, oh,
you're
man.
You walked with this guy through Newtown?
I know. I love your purple hair. I'm going to touch you. Yo, yeah. And then all the older women, like 50 to 65, man, they walk up to you. They're like, oh, sign my chest, Plum. Oh, my God.
That's my demo.
That's wild, man. I mean, yeah, that's definitely your demographic. You're definitely in there with them. Like if for some reason, like, something terrible happened
yeah.
and you were single, you could move down to, like, Boca Raton and do very well. Very well.
I'm a big fan of women that feel like leather.
Come on,
I like tandem hides. Jesus. Jeffy, none of that. See, all of that was not good. That was all, like, that wasn't like a positive thing that you said right there.
What do you mean? That's super positive, man.
You think?
I'm just saying. Yeah. You got a lot of people that back you.
Jesus.
I follow you everywhere. I carry your knife roll. What are you talking about, man? I'm your bestie.
Listen.
I got your back.
You
got
to check it out. ctpublic.org/roadtrip. All the Restaurant Road Trip episodes are airing there. You can find them all. A lot of fun. Next week, my friends, is our buddy Dan Cardos at Orinoke. I'm really looking forward to that one. It should be a lot of fun.
He's the best. Also, Dan Cardos is my favorite.
Dan's the man. Listen, I had a great conversation with Patty Heenich today for NPR, and literally one of my favorites on Seasoned. That show airs on NPR Radio. You can find it anywhere you find fine digital audio as well, podcasts, all those things. But it's one of those chefs who, like, she's so down to earth. I'm actually going to get her on this program, too. I can't wait. But she's so fun, and it gets me so fired up talking about Mexican cuisine. She used the word taco like a verb. Yep. She was like, did you give a Mexican a tortilla shell on the table with nothing else? They'll taco their shoes.
Taco their shoes.
Listen, she said it, not me. Laughed my ass off at it. She was like, we taco everything. I was like, I'm going to start using taco as a verb.
You already know I love Mexico. Viva la Mexico.
Yeah, well, I do know. We've been there together for events. But whenever I have grammatical questions, I always go to my Plum Love Foods grammatical liaison in Chef Dan. Dan, can the word taco be used as a verb?
I'd have to ask my wife about this. She'd know better than I, but I'm going to go with absolutely.
Hello, this is Jose Heineken.
My mom.
That's my favorite. Anyway, you can check out that show, man. It's on anywhere you get podcasts. Look up Seasoned. It's a great show. I highly recommend it. There's a lot of really, really good food talk in that. And she talks about making fideo tacos, which is, you know, pasta tacos. Pretty dope.
And it's well-produced Seasoned. Ooh. Very well-produced.
Tell me, Jeffy, do you know the producer there?
I 6 points of separation, we're friends or something. But you're Robin. She's amazing. Just throwing it out there.
She's going to be really happy you said that. She's going to love you for that. A lot. You just left me hanging. left me hanging there, Jeffy. What were you?
I was drinking. You always say stuff to me when I go to have a drink. I try to have a drink.
You start a conversation. Let me respond. They're like, hold on. Let me chug this.
No,
40.
I dropped the bomb. I drop a bomb on you. I let it out. It hits you. And then I go to have a sip. And then you come back so fast. Like, you don't let it linger.
Well, I just know when to. That's all. Last professional broadcaster. That's me. All right, boys. We got a great chef standing by in the green. We want to get him on the show as soon as possible. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And we come back, we'll be joined by the one, the only Chef Lamar Moore. Stay right there. You got Plum Love Foods Live. It's Chef Plum, Chef Jeff, Chef Dan. We'll be right back. Hang tight.
Oh, yeah, Dave. Ergo Chef Knives, the knives used by so many culinary professionals, including all of us here on the program.
From the entry-level Prodigy series to the super sharp Shinzui made from Japanese V10 steel, Ergo Chef has something for everyone.
Hey, listen, every single day I use my Pro Series Santuco, and I love it, man. You've seen my knife bag, haven't you? I mean, I've got like three of them in there. It's a great quality knife made by great quality people. And if my word's not enough, just ask guys like Myron Mixon, Guy Fieri, Michael Simon, and tons more.
Tell them you heard about them on Plum Love Foods by using promo code PLUM for a great discount on everything in your order. Knives so sharp, even the great city of Detroit approves.
Get some new gear at ErgoChef.com. Promo code PLUM. That's ErgoChef.com.
Oh, yeah, Jeffy.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Jeffy. Plum. What's up, buddy?
You know where good food starts?
Let me think about that real quick. A kitchen?
Close.
Okay, let me guess again.
It's in the kitchen.
Okay. The ocean?
That's not in the kitchen.
Okay. One more guess. Taco Bell.
No, man.
Oh, I know where, Jeffy. The Pantry, the number one gourmet specialty food shop in Fairfield, Connecticut. At The Pantry, their main goal is to provide customers with superior food choices, Jeffy, along with the legendary customer service like my man Dan does that you'd expect in an upscale market. The Pantry in Fairfield, they have it all.
That's right, Chef. Award-winning pastries, spectacular prepared food choices, amazing deli and salad bar, specialty and mainstream groceries, top quality meat, seafood, produce, and more.
You know what sets the Petri apart? The Petri? You know what sets
the Petri? The Petri?
Just a little behind the scenes. As we're trying to do a live read, we try to mess each other up by typing words in the copy as we're reading. Here we go. Great customer service, great food, and they're great employees, Jeffy. And they don't mind a little laugh now and then here when we do a live read for them. Don't forget to check out the take-home meals section as well. One of my favorites, the Duroc pork chops. Those are awesome. Next level.
The Pantry, 1580 Post Road in Fairfield, Connecticut. Good food starts here.
One of these days, it's not going to end well when we're doing one of those.
Nah, man. I'm too smooth with it.
Hey, you are smooth with it. Plum Love Foods live right here on a Thursday. It's your boy, Chef Plum. Chef Jeff, Chef Dan. Whew. Getting ready for it. But the energy level's good. I like the energy level. Like, this just feels better. Yeah, yeah. We're not talking to somebody while they're working.
I'm not dying.
Yo, Jeff,
there's a lot more energy coming at me right now.
We don't have to
struggle in the breathe.
We have to pull up the soundboard, Jeffy. We got the real Jeffy here.
Oh, finally. God. We missed them. Yes. Missed them.
That's just right.
So much better. We don't like robot Jeffy.
No, definitely not. 100% definitely not. I'll tell you what, boys. Our next guest, our only guest, not our next guest, our guest joined the program
he's
right now.
For this evening.
That's right. He's born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, and has been learning and loving culinary arts since age of 8. Not only that, this guy is funny as hell. One of the funnest guys ever. I got the chance to share the stage with this gentleman, and we had an absolute blast. He's a super talented chef, but above all else, he's an incredibly nice guy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program, Chef Lamar Moore. Attaboy, Chef.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi.
Right. Town is in the house.
Hey, what's up, Chef?
What's up, man? How you guys doing?
Oh, not bad, man. We're just over here running our mouths, fucking up things that people pay money for.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Nothing at all.
That's it. Dude, I got to tell you, man, we're so excited to have you here on the program. We had the best time on stage. I had so much fun with you. I was on stage that day with so many people, but you and I, we just had a fucking blast.
Yeah, man, it was fun. You know, it's you know, when you're cooking and, you know, we had a little bourbon too, so that kind of helped. You know, as chefs, I think we've forgotten sometimes that, you know, food is fun, and we definitely kicked ass on that stage, man. Looking forward to doing it again.
Oh, hell, absolutely, yeah. That event, we talk about it all the time on this program. We do tons of, you know, festivals and things. That one in particular is one of the funnest on the fucking planet. It's one of the best events ever.
Yeah, it was, very much so.
And you made some pretty baller steak, man. Two nights in a row. Wait, did you demo what you did at the Friday night event?
That's exactly what I did. I just feel, you know, I figured it'd be a little connection, you know, demoing the steak and then actually cooking the thing too. So people get excited about steak and, you know, it's, and again, when you're pairing steak with a really good alcohol, which is, you know, kind of what I love anyway, bourbon and steak. And I think we had a little bourbon on the stage and a little bit of flambé going too.
You so, think?
You know, a little bit.
Dude, a little bit. Touch. Yeah, we had so fun. We were doing the Dine Around event and we made a take on hot chicken and this butter, spraying butter everywhere just got out of control.
Sometimes it happens like that, you know?
That's the way it goes. The point.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just goes like that. That's how we have fun, man.
That's it. Brother, you're from one of my favorite cities in the country, Chicago, man. Talk about food in Chicago, growing up in Chicago, getting your love for culinary arts so early in your life. Talk about that a little bit.
You know, Chicago is a huge melting pot, man. It's like we have so many, you know, separate neighborhoods that are all connected. I know it sounds weird. It's like an oxymoron. And, you know, I think of like, you know, if you get on the plane and let's say you're coming from O'Hare, which is far up north, by the time you get, you know, to the north side, you have, you go into Logan Square, there's Lincoln Park, and then, you know, you got the South Loop, the West Loop, River West, River North. I mean, and every area is very, you know, the food is very different,
right.
But we still have the same when everyone's, you know, talking about, well, there's Chicago style pizza and there's Chicago style hot dogs. By the way, I don't do ketchup. I just want to make that known. I kind of shout about that. I can hate ketchup on stuff, so we don't really do ketchup here.
Like on everything?
Not even on fries?
I don't do ketchup either, so I'm with them.
I don't have ketchup in my restaurants.
At all.
I
use aioli, bro.
Aioli? All right. Well, hey, you got me. I love a little aioli on everything. I'm with you.
I don't see ketchup as a condiment. I think it's kind of one of those things that you make something with it. Like, I had somebody ask me, we were talking about steaks. I was like, yeah, can I get ketchup on a steak? I was like, get the fuck. I don't even know how that's even a thing, but, you know, neither here nor there. But, you know, I grew up around really good food. And I think what made me want to do it, because not only because I enjoy the food, I saw my grandma, you know, both my grandmothers, they help people with food. You know, I had one that, you know, she would drive the church every Sunday and she would do dinners at the church for people. And I had another one where a house I ended up growing up in where she turned our home into a place where, you know, she helped elderly people that couldn't cook for themselves.
Right.
And crazy thing, like my first job, I worked in a hospital. So I was even more in touch to trying to help people because, you know, you think of hospital food as, you know, obsolete, but it was a restaurant inside a hospital, so I didn't work in the cafeteria. And you think of your job as a cook at that time or a chef is to make food because somebody's sick, somebody's probably dying,
right.
Probably just died. There's births, there's happy. There's so many different highs and lows that I think that sometimes we forget, you know, as people. And that's what brought me, you know, really, really inspired me to want to be a chef and a cook is because I saw my grandmas do it and I saw how cool it was to, you know, help communities and, you know, definitely being a Chicagoan that's been really, really big for me and being able to give back, you know, to areas and people that I grew up seeing and doing too.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions in. So with that, cause obviously food nourishes people. So we naturally are caregivers as chefs, I think in a roundabout way. That's how I've always looked at it. You know, we prepare things with our hands and we feed it to people for that. And we get that immediate gratification. And, you know, I guess it makes me feel good when people like my food. And I'm guessing the same thing for you in a very, you know, rudimentary sense. But more importantly, with no ketchup, what do you guys put on your hot dog sandwiches?
Did you say hot dog sandwich?
Thank you. Smack. Swing at him.
You know, do you know the chef, Andrew Zimmerman? I think he made a post I saw on Instagram, yeah. I don't know, a month or two ago, how like the hot dog, I guess, is a sandwich. And I was like, how? And they were like, well, because it's sandwich between bread. I was like, I don't give a shit. I'm not a hot dog.
Thank you.
You want to make it as a sandwich? Listen, man, I'll get two pieces of white bread, toast it up, and I'll try the hell out of a hot dog and make it a sandwich. But I don't. It's not a sandwich. So I'm just going to throw it in my book. It's not a sandwich.
Thank you.
So it's been from the East.
It's been an ongoing thing on the show. It's been an ongoing thing to have a...
We're not doing that here in Chicago. You want a sandwich, you better be between two pieces of bread. You got to hold it with both your damn hands.
Well, we got to talk about this casserole you guys call pizza in Chicago, though. Come on, bro.
Listen. I'm going to tell you right now. When you get off that seat, that's what I'm saying. When you get off that airplane, pick your poison. One of my favorites is Pequod's, right? You know, everyone talks about Illuminati. They're all good. But if you're going to stop at Pequod's, you know... The only disconnect I have with Pequod's is that they got a lot of Cubs fan gear in there, and I'm not a Cubs fan. I am a White Sox fan. I'm a Southsider. Yeah. The only thing I don't like. But other than that, the pizza is amazing. And you can call it a casserole all you want, my dude, but I'm telling you, you eat a slice of that and a cold beer, you're going to
We had some. We bought two pies when we got snowed in O'Hara. We're trying to come back from Mexico. We got stuck, and we ended up going to a hotel. We got two pies. It is delicious. We couldn't find – I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't delicious. I just feel like it's so far from pizza.
You see, that's the thing, man. As Chicagoans, we love to give you food that hug the hell out of you. You know what I mean?
There you go.
You got a hug from Chicago with a cold beer, and you was good. And that's the thing, you know. That's what's beautiful about Chicago. Like today, I think it was 93 degrees outside, and it's just the city just turns into a whole different, you know, realm. Like you go by the lake, it's like 75. Inner, it's like 95. You go further south, it just feels like a desert. You know, it's just so many different melting pots in this city, and then the food on top of that. You know, you go south where I'm at, and you get some old kick-ass barbecue from like the 1960s and 70s that's still around. I had one of my favorites earlier today. I was having a fat moment, and I love a pizza puff. So like when you talk about like, you know, calling the pie, I had somebody tell me, it's like, oh, like empanada. I was like, no, bro, it's a pizza puff. And I don't know what that is. I was like, literally, it, just think of eating pizza wrapped in a donut, deep fried with mouth sauce. We eat mouth sauce here. So,
okay, you know, all right.
Famous. But, you know, it's the thing. Get a little corner spot. I stay not too far from the White Sox Park. So you can pull up, you know, get a Chicago-style hot dog, you know, catch up.
nice Chicago-style hot dog sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm just fucking with you, man.
Yeah, break down a traditional Chicago hot dog.
That's what I'm going to make next time I come to Mohegan. They're like, what are you making, Chef? I'm going to beef Chicago hot dog sandwich. Like, what is he?
Yo, how would you do it? Chef, let me know. Yo, I want to know what a Chicago hot dog is to you. What would your best Chicago hot dog be?
Yo, have you ever had a Chicago hot dog, Dan?
Jeffy, no, let him answer the question. What are you doing?
Bruh, okay, let me break it down to you. It is a Vienna dog. It has a good snap to it. The bun is lightly steamed. You don't cook the bun. It's steamed. Okay. It's a sesame poppy seed bun. And then you get sport peppers, diced tomatoes. And so I said this, and somebody's like, you're still eating ketchup because it's tomato. I said, shut up.
Oh,
no.
Tomato
and ketchup is not the same. Mm-mm. Anyway, there's green relish, a slither of mustard, and onions. And you're good to go.
A little coleslaw and a big pickle?
I'm not Coney Island, my dude. You just went Coney Island on me.
All right, my fault. I'm just checking.
What's the name of that little pepper they put on there in Chicago? They got like this like long.
That's sport pepper.
Yeah.
Sport pepper. Yeah,
delicious.
All right.
Yeah, they're amazing.
See, I just have to get deep into this food. Whenever we get somebody from Chicago or from Detroit who are very serious about their food, we got to ask questions about it. I have another chef buddy of mine in Chicago, Chef Aaron Reed, good friend of mine, and I always talk with him about Chicago food. He gets very fired up about it, which makes me, you know, obviously throw more gasoline on the fire. It's just fun to watch it burn.
you ever been to Wiener Circle?
Of course. You know, it's not the same as it is anymore. You know, everyone's all excited about how like, you're going to cut you out of the counter and so on and so forth. If I'm mistaken, they don't do that anymore, but the experience is still the same because they're just super loud and obnoxious. But
yo, that was my spot in the 90s. I used to go there all the time. We used to go to all these raves and then come back and go there, and then we go to like the steps and sit at the lake or whatever that I used to think was the ocean.
Chef, I want to ask you a little bit about your career. You said you kind of started off working in sports stadiums, man. I think that's really interesting. What a completely different style of cooking, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny we talk about hot dogs. You know, when I first got into it, I was like, oh, man, I signed up to sell nachos, hot dogs, and popcorn. Now, that does happen, but what I didn't realize is how much the amount of food it takes to you're doing sweet, you're doing the players, the teams, and the teams meaning, you know, home and away. So, for example, like we would do like a seasonal menu based off that team. So, like, the stadium says 65,000 people. Then you have the club. We're responsible for. That's another 2,000 people, plus the concessions, you know, all the way around. And so in the club menus, we would change weekly. So, for example, if it was the Seattle Seahawks, so we would find something that people would eat in Seattle, and we would do a premiere with that on the menu. So, like, I would do, like, salmon, which is from that area, and then Northwest, you know, because it works. You know, obviously, we talk Philly. Like, if we're doing Philly, we would do, like, Actually, Philly was cool because we did what we call the Battle of the Beast. So obviously Chicago, we do Italian beef here, and then there they had a Philly cheese. So
right.
We did like we Battle of the Beast or something like that. And then you got all the parties. So like I was very fortunate to cook for the Obamas there because they came and had an event there. And then we had a NATO event where they brought in all the world leaders some time ago. Wow. And we were able to do events like that. Having them flip out to come. It opened my eyes a lot because it made you think about volume very differently and how long it takes, you know, to cook for people like that. And like how if you screw up one recipe, you know, it could just skew, you know, thousands of pounds or something. So I'll tell you one thing I did, and it was the worst thing ever. So it was like my second day, and the pastry chef had made like, I was like over 700 cakes and had them on these racks in the cooler. And I went in to go move one of the racks and not knowing that I needed to lift the rack from the bottom, which thing happened?
Oh, no.
I knocked over half those cakes.
Oh, no.
No, oh, cool. Man. I took, well, at that time, it was Uber, so I walked to the grocery store, I bought four restaurants, and Lamar is baking cake all night long. So that was my stadium life. Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny, man. That's crazy. Did you tell the pastry chef or no?
She was standing there looking at me.
Oh, fuck.
He saw the cake going down.
Damn.
Yeah, man.
She should have told
you. No. I'm going to
the store
by Rockstar.
It
looks like I'm
going to
be here all night.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. That's terrible. Dan, throw them plugs out for Chef before we move on here.
Absolutely. You can catch Chef Lamar at Chef_LJM on his IG.
That's it. Chef.
Boom.
I got it. So how do you go from doing that sort of volume? And I'm not like talking about like, how obviously you have the skills to do it, but like to go back to doing just a restaurant, like it's a whole, your mindset has to change completely. Obviously you have the talent to do it, the skills to do it. But I mean, are you like, yeah, we need to make 7,000 pounds of salsa tonight just in case?
Well, I'll tell you, it does a yes and a no. Cause I'll tell you, like when I first got to the stadium, I had a really awesome chef. And obviously my mindset at that time, you know, was fine dining. And so when we would think about what we wanted to cook, you know, and I tell people, you know, everything that you do in a stadium, it goes in a sheet, it goes in a hotel pan.
Yeah.
But there were moments where we do a lot of plate-ups too, which is also great. You think about doing weddings in a stadium like that. I mean, I think the largest one we did for like 5,000 people, and it was nuts. But what he said to me, and this is the word that took over everything. He's like, Chef, I want you to take your plate that you think of in the fine dining restaurant and put that entire plate in a hotel pan.
Wow.
For example, let's say I make, you know, like seared salmon, lemon beurre blanc, orzo pasta, and broccolini, right? So I would have to do, if I knew like the club, for example, was doing 1,000 people, so then I needed to determine how many people I think is going to eat out of a hotel pan. And so if you think of a rectangle hotel, right?
Yep.
So like I would cascade the orzo in the middle, and then in one of the corners would be the broccolini, or whatever vegetable, and then the other corner is a salmon, and then the lemon butter sauce we have on the side in a heat kettle. And so then I had to figure out how am I going to stabilize doing a lemon beurre blanc. So I would take a basic classic French beurre blanc and add a Supreme sauce to it because Supreme's got flour in it, so yep. It doesn't break.
It won't break.
Or you can use so it doesn't break because it's keep it warm. So it's being able to take those the mindset that you use in a restaurant and just multiplying it, you know, on a larger scale to still put out quality food. You know, and knowing that, okay, so I'm going to cook this salmon now three times, right? So we bring in that fresh salmon. We're going to sear it, well, twice. You're going to sear it. You're going to sear it, you know, for putting them in the pan. But we only sear it up to, like, medium rare,
right?
You know, or rare, depending on how thick it is. When it gets cooked in the oven, it's going to get cooked all the way through, and then it's got to travel in the hot box. So you're literally just getting hot undercooking it because it's going to sit in the box at least 4 hours before it hits the gas. Because we got to hold, we got to put in a box, got to get up to where it's going to go. So it's being able to think like that too, to be able to put out, you know, quality food. But the other piece is really, really learn to trust your staff. I mean, I had a staff of over 400 people and 9 chefs. And the thing is, you think of the size of the stadium, like if shit hit the fan on one side of the stadium, there ain't nothing you can do about that. Yeah. Like, I'll give you a funny thing. We forget, right? So, like, we used to do prime ribs. And we just had to load them in the Alto Champs the night before throughout the stadium. And I remember one time I got a call on the radio, and they were like, hey, we're running out of prime ribs. I was like, you better call down to the kitchen and tell them to throw it in a Dutch oven. And the guy was like, what's a Dutch oven? I said, my friend, the deep fryer. Tell them to split it in half, throw it in the deep fryer. I was like, you don't, because you think about it, you're in a stadium, you ain't got time to cook, you know, a 20 pound prime rib for to be ready. But it's just fry and cut it down all the day and throw some ragu on it. You know, it's not something that you want to do, but you think about, I can't get to the other side of the stadium. It takes me 20, 30 minutes on a regular day stadium when it's empty, when there's a bunch of people in there, even through our VIP areas, that's like an hour.
And
being able to manage that, you know, and trusting that your team is going to set up. And I've seen, and I've traveled, you know, working a lot of stadiums where I've seen a lot of screw ups. Some of the ones that you can't recuperate. So another one, when we would do the suites, when we do a stadium, the VIPs, the owner suites, always the ones that get their food first. Imagine being the chef on the call the next day, knowing that you didn't get to food to the owner suites on time. But you got to pass through some of the areas where the guests are at. So we're there earlier, and you hear on the radio, like, has anybody checked the owner suites? Anybody check? And you go by, and there's no food, and the owners are in there.
Oh, no.
And then now you bring food while they're already sitting. That is the worst call to be on. And I have been very fortunate in my career. I've never been on that side, but I've seen some chefs that have been on that side. I'm like, they don't lose their job. Now, they don't lose their job. Because you think about, you can't. They're the owners.
Yeah.
You don't do anything. Yet you make sure, you know, they get their stuff, and then get that, and you get some weird specialties. Like when you get towards like the playoffs, like the Bears will go pretty deep sometimes. They would travel me around and work at some of the, you know, the really cool games, which I enjoy. Like I've done a bunch of NBA Finals, World Series games. So you're doing the VIP stuff. So when you think about that, now go back to your fine dining. Because some of these suites are set up for like really nice crystal, you know, glasses, really nice plating. And so you have a kitchen that's inside, like I can't remember what stadium I was in. Their kitchen is actually inside of the suite. And like you literally cook everything on plates. They had really nice service staff. Like it was just like super, like you need to like do what you do best and show up. So every stadium, I learned that every stadium is different. Every crowd is different. How you cook is very different, but the same. Like you were saying, being able to cook in bulk. I remember one time, like I was managing like four areas one day, and I was making 200 gallons of bechamel, and I had it on low, and I came back and scored. And it's like you can't cover that. Like, you gotta
Jesus.
And start over. Oh, you know, like you can't And you look, and now you're a day behind already on that, and now you got to wait for the next order to come in. And start all over, and you got this 200-pound that takes an hour to get hot, and now you're behind doing that. It's crazy. And being late, you walk in late in the morning. So if a game, and I'll tell you one last one. So if a game is at 12 o'clock, if it's a day game, the staff starts at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
If it's a 7 p.m. game, the staff starts at 12. You got to be there hella early. You're gonna work about 15-hour shift per day. When it was a night game, the chef, or we would have one chef come in later, and he would stay overnight because they were washing dishes till about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God.
So you pulled some 20-hour shifts.
Oh, big time. But you know what, though? It has its plus and minuses. You think you're doing that during the season when the season's over, and you work like, you know, 6-7 hours a day. You're just feeding the staff there and working on meetings for the next year unless they travel you around. So, you know, it balances itself out. And plus, you're drilling excited about doing it. You know, you don't care about 20 hours. You ain't thinking about that.
No, you're preaching to the choir here, and we all of us here have a lot of banquet experience and work in, you know, big events. And now, like, as you know, I work private. I work with the family. And so when it's in season and it's the summertime, I'm busy as shit. But in the off season, it's not so much. So I totally get it. Chef, just to tag your story a little bit, we recently did a dinner. I had a guest chef spot, this really boutique hotel here on the shoreline in Connecticut. And
Madison Beach Hotel.
And they said, hey, be a guest chef. Would you come in? You know, we'll do 40 people. You know, you could do 5 courses. And they're like, we'd love for you to do like a Northwest, you know, cuisine type menu.
Pacific Northwest.
Dude, I do like Southern food with like weird things to it. Because that's just what I grew up on. But I was like, okay, cool. So Jeffy and I put our heads together. We come up with a menu. It's great. And so we're hanging out, we got the menu ready to go, and we got all our stuff, and they call me and say, well, chef, the tickets sold out really quick. You mind if we do 50 people? Well, I mean, chef, you know, it's really no difference in 50 and 40, whatever, fine, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually at the event at Mohegan with you, and they call me, and they say, hey, by the way, chef, can we do 60 people? And I was like, okay, we're just going to keep doing it. We're not getting paid for the event. We're just going to go and be there. And they hit me with, oh, by the way, Jacques Pepin wants to come and bring his daughter and stepson, and he's really excited to meet you. Is that okay?
Son-in-law.
Yes, of course. yeah. So, anyway, long story short, here I was thinking we were doing this, you know, plated, beautiful dinner out of this kitchen that's in this great big hotel. Like, oh, we have plenty of help for you. It's going to be great. They didn't have any help at all. Thankfully, I had Jeff and Dan with me. We got it done. We had one of the guys there was very helpful, Chef Steven. But and Mo helped out some, too. He mainly just ran
Mo, and what was the tall dude with the mustache, the white-haired brother?
I don't remember that guy's name.
He hugged you. He had a picture of you.
Yeah, he loved us. He was great. Mark.
He had a picture of him on his phone.
But so it's time to serve the dinner, Chef, right? And we're like, okay, cool. So we're sitting on this like side of the kitchen we figure we're firing from. And they go, oh, no, you got to fire from upstairs in one of the storage rooms is where we fire all the banquets. What? Yeah, you're going to bring it. You're going to hotbox everything. And we're going to fire it from this storage room. I'm like, Jeffy, what the fuck?
Oh, the Altishams don't work really that good, though.
You're just giving away you're giving away the bathwater before we put the baby in it.
Sorry. Jesus that was the Christ, part that Jeffy. Made my head spin.
Well, so nonetheless, we get things up there. Their hot boxes don't work. There's nothing to keep things hot in. By the way, where we're plating food up, there's an air conditioning vent right over top the table. And P.S., we're serving food to Jacques Pepin. When it comes to needing to figure things out, we've definitely done our share of that and get how that goes. It's just, it's when you do banquets, you do big events, or whether it's 7,000 people or 60 people, something is, whatever can go wrong is probably going to go wrong, even things you haven't thought of. It's just, that's the way it goes. It always happens.
That's crazy.
By the way, you're serving Jacques Pepin. Hope you don't mind your soup being cold. What the fuck?
That part.
I was like, yo. Jeff goes, oh, the hot box is not even fucking hot. Yeah.
Yeah, the plate was cold.
Oh, man. I yelled at some poor waitress. I felt so bad afterwards. But she came in and was like, you know, Jacques Pepin really likes his soup, or the owner of the hotel likes his soup hot, or somebody said some shit. And I was like, well, then move your ass. I'm like, why are we fucking plating under an air conditioner? I was just like, I mean, all the things just started flowing out of my mouth to this poor lady. I had to be like, I'm so sorry, ma'am.
So dumb. So, Chef, just moving on here a little bit, man. You're a graduate of Le Cordon Bleu. I'm a big fan of culinary school. You know, Dan and I both went to CIA. Jeffy's never been to CIA, never been to any culinary school. For you,
I can barely read.
Was culinary school a good thing?
I was. Culinary school taught me a lot of discipline, how to, you know, really understand French cuisine and structure. That was big for me. And I wish that a lot of, you know, the younger culinarians had some of the experiences I had doing, you know, going to school. Don't really seem to be much of that as much anymore, but definitely gave me a leg up on what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I think it's helpful. I think like I'd been working in restaurants for damn near 10 years before I went to culinary school, but I had no idea what a fucking brunoise was.
Right. You exactly.
I mean, you need me to work the grill? Yeah, I can do that shit. No problem. Bang it out. Mm-hmm. Be awesome. But you want me to cut a batonette? What the fuck is that? That's where I was at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I felt smart because I figured out what a roux was. I was like, I know how to make a roux.
I'm saying, like what's that salt? Beurre blanc? What is that?
What is that? What the fuck? Don't you speak Spanish? Don't say that.
Right.
Yeah, but that part. School was a good thing for me, man. I agree with you. The discipline was super important in it. But you spent a lot of time also traveling as well, right? I should do more. I really want to travel more, but you've been all over the place.
Yeah, man, you know, it's weird. Again, I think a lot of my career, it's a lot of stuff that I said I wanted to do. I never thought that I'd be doing it. I mean, just like how I met yourself. I think, you know, traveling has been great. You know, it gives an opportunity. You don't realize as a chef how different perspectively you can learn to cook until you're around other chefs. And then you're in a different area and you see how they cook and how they move. And I was very fortunate with companies that I work with where I travel. Like I said, when I work in a stadium, man, I can tell you, like, being a sports fan, number one. Number two, working in so many different environments and chefs, you learn from different people all the time. So you're basically getting paid to educate yourself.
Right.
You know, and then you start different chefs all over the world. And you're then educated by what they do. And you guys are crossing recipes and references and people. And you'd be surprised how quickly that stuff comes back around, too. You know, when you're doing events and stuff like that, you know, like you said, you create these really great relationships. And, you start to look up, you know, 18 years later, you guys are still doing the same events you've been doing 10 years ago, and you guys become great friends, and, you know, we travel. You know, we love being able to take care of each other, which is also great, too. So it's almost like a work vacation, to say the least. And so I definitely appreciate, you know, being able to travel and get on the plane or even driving if I have to, you know, to know that I'm going to either, you know, curate some good food and go to an event and visit some restaurants or places that I always wanted to do, and just doing it, you know, culinarily, should I say.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I like how you put that. You're kind of just educating yourself while you're doing it. That's absolutely the truth, man. Absolutely. I mean, but you got to give yourself tests, you know. Do you ever give yourself a bad grade?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. Oh, that was a shitty day. Why did I cook that? Oh, yeah.
Damn. Hey, man, I know how much it means to you, too, to help kids out and be a part of their lives. I know you've done some work out in Chicago, you know, doing some... you know, stuff with high school kids and doing like some demos and workshops and stuff, and also doing a little bit of work with the ProStart. Talk a little bit about that. I've done some work with ProStart myself, man, and just working with kids, how important that is to you.
You know, I started when I was living in California almost, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. Some program was very close to that that I enjoyed. And when I moved back into Chicago, it was an opportunity to not only educationally, you know, like yourself, you know, I started judging a lot of competitions. And what was great for me is that when I was in school, we didn't have really that many culinary programs. And I started to see the CPS, Chicago Public Schools, you know, had a lot of programs for kids to get scholarships to go to school. Mm-hmm. I had a tough time trying to find money to go to school. My mom took out three loans for me to go to culinary school. And
wow.
I was grateful for a company that was able to repay my loan, you know, as I got older. And you don't really have that as much either, especially after COVID. You can barely get insurance for a lot of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great because you get to give these students a bird's eye view of what I didn't have as a young culinary student. So, for example, I always dreamed of working downtown in Chicago, like most kids in any big city. You know, only be a chef or cook downtown. I didn't have that opportunity until I was far gone in the industry 10 years and I moved out to Chicago. Then I was able to work downtown. Where now these kids, especially from how I grew up, they get chefs like myself and other chefs to be able to come in and stage and walk kitchens that you couldn't walk, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
So those opportunities are there. And then if you're really good enough, you can mold a few that's really interested in what you're doing. And it comes back around, like in summertime when you're out of school, they'll come to work for you because they remember, you know, having a conversation and remember some of the mentorship.
Yeah.
And so like when we talk about stadiums, like, that was one of my biggest joys with ProStart because I had my staff and then we would add another 60 to 70 students that would come work game day with us. And some of those students end up getting hired and staying on as they were going through school, either here in Chicago or they would come back in the summer months. And I got two of them now, you know, work with me, you know, 18 years ago, they're chefs now.
That's,
you know, they're not
awesome.
Here locally.
Hell yeah.
Those programs.
That's great. And what a great job to get to work in the stadium. Like, they probably make pretty decent money, like, for their age doing that and getting great experience and be around some cool shit, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then on top of that, now we're at that space where, you know, social media is now being more in front of us than we've ever thought. And so now it's showing students that they don't just have to be a chef anymore. You know, there are so many other different avenues, you know, in the industry that they can see and do.
Oh, yeah.
So great. Like one of my sponsors I work with, Hormel Foods, they have a big booth they're going to do this year, and I'm going to do a small little demo of some of their food. But I've asked them if they could set up a time where I could bring the students over to the booth so they can meet and greet, and they're going to do that. You know, so it gives these kids an opportunity to see, you know, you don't have to be a chef. You can be on the food service side. You can be on the sales side of that. They have a social media team that's present. You know, the younger generation is really into it. So it gives them a different perspective than what I got 20 years ago, because social media wasn't around then. Hell, we had pagers at that time. We didn't have iPhone.
That's right. Remember all the pager codes you could put in? Like,
I was just thinking that.
Remember that, Jeffy? You'd be like, 911.
I don't know this code. I ain't calling this motherfucker. Who is this?
Who is this?
007.
Who's 89?
No, that's the one from my mother. I better go get home in 45 minutes, otherwise I'll be in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the one so I used to get.
So,
it's so many different stuff, so much cool stuff now that we can do with these kids, which I appreciate.
Well, it's funny because then doing all the things you've done have led you to doing some fun stuff with TV, and I say it all the time, man. You know, I get so angry when I hear chefs who talk about, or kids who talk about, oh, I'm going to have my own TV show, and I'm going to work in, you know, culinary media, and that the fact that's even a thing is crazy to me. But I tell them all the time, I'm like, listen, man, all of that shit, you know, that stuff, you know, having a TV show and doing all these things, or, you know, that's all for me a byproduct of 30 years of working in the industry, like of working my ass off from, you know, five diamond, five star hotels to small restaurants. You don't just get that like that. You have to earn that. And, you know, I feel like you finally got to a point in your career where you were earning that as well, by getting a little recognition with Food Network and Bravo and doing some things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is I wasn't searching for it. It was just something, to your point, that just happened. And, you know, you earn your keep through that. And one of the things I always tell people, I tell students a lot too, TV chef and real chef are two different jobs and two different things. I try to explain that so much.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that you don't get on TV and you actually really cook, because I felt like the things that I did, I really cook. But it's a different perspective, because you're basically taking your work experience and being able to put that on a TV fast-paced experience and trying to win, or trying to, for like they were, prove a point when you're cooking, you know, that show that, you know, you're basically showing off your skill at some of the most, you know, high deficit levels. And I know, like, the first time I cooked on Food Network, it was Chopped, and I was scared shitless. It was like 25 cameras in my face. I was scared as hell. I was excited to do it, but I was scared.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't think, and that's the other thing. I tell people, I didn't think I would ever do TV again. Not because I didn't enjoy it. It's just, it comes to you. It's nothing that, I mean, you can source it out, you know, as you get older, you move around, people hire agents and so on and so forth, but it still has a fit, you know, what they are looking for and what it is you're trying to do, you know, culinarily or with yourself. And, yeah. And I think that misunderstanding of like, yeah, you can go after it, but there's a certain stature of experience that when you get to a point where it makes that more fruitful than just doing it, unless you have a lane for that, you know, and it just sticks.
Hell of a career, my friend. Hell of a fucking career. Seriously, it's impressive, man. You've worked your ass off for it. You deserve every bit of it, no doubt about it.
Appreciate that. Likewise, man.
Let me ask you this question, though. This is just a colleague to colleague. You have all these sponsors, and I like, you're doing the thing with Vitamix coming up. That is the hardest part for me, and it's probably because I don't have an agent anymore or anything like that to help. But like, those things are so cool when you can get them.
Very much so. That's another one. So I'll tell you, I'll go backwards. So when I was 2016 was my last corporate job, and I decided that I wanted to do things on my own. It was like the hardest decision I made. But, you know, they say things that come hard are the best things that are good for you. And I started working with this grocery store chain here locally in Chicago called Mariano's.
Okay.
And we used to do together in demos. And what I appreciate about them is that they allowed me to expand what I want to do culinarily. What I didn't know is how companies, they look at you when you're able to present a company very well.
Right.
And so I in this article, and anybody can find anywhere, it was the craziest thing. So Master P said something a long time ago in one of his shows or something. He said, you know, when you're at a space when you're trying to make a bill for yourself. He said when he signed his record deal. Someone offered him $1 million. He turned it down. He said, I never, ever take the first thing. He said, because when you get to the third one, that's the one that you really work. Right. And what you don't realize is that a lot of the companies, they're wanting you, but they're also gauging where you are at, where you're at with other companies. Like some of the collaborations that I have, like some of my contracts are set up where like I have no compete, or like I can't, you know, I can't work for their competitor that they're looking at for 6 months or a year or 2 years. And so when you start doing them, they just keep coming. Like, I personally hired my own personal PR literally a year ago, but all the other times I literally was picking them up on my own.
Right.
And it's because they have companies that they reach out. And what I tell people all the time is when you think that companies are not watching, they are. You just don't know who the people are because it's not the actual, like if it's on Instagram, let's say if it's like Tillamook Cheese, for example, let's say with them, that doesn't, if, it's usually not the handle of Tillamook that's looking at you. It's the people that you have working
right.
for them that
right.
you, but you never know who they are. And so you're if you're doing a social media piece of that, they're looking at your content creation, and then they're also looking at your background. So that's the other thing about, you know, again, being a chef, like we now have a leg up in a lot of this stuff because we understand recipe acumen. We understand what it takes to make things work, to manipulate things. And then if we are utilizing that product in our restaurants, that just gives them, you know, a plus plus. And my advice, like for somebody like yourself, the people, I tell people all the time, if I sign on something, it's because I believe in it. I don't sign on because they give me a check. I sign because it's something I'm going to use. And actually, as I talk about, tell them, look, it's actually one of my favorite cheeses to use, and I do use them, and I partner with them on a lot of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. But their cheese is good, their place is good, and I enjoy what they do. So and I'm not disrespecting anyone else's lane, but I just say for me personally, if it's something that I taste or test, it's something that I appreciate or that I like working with, even if it's something new that I didn't, you know, think that I would like or use, and I taste or test the product, I'm like, oh, this is cool, and I'm excited about, you know, now partnering with a company, working with them, you know, and engaging those sponsorships. But I'll tell you another piece of that too, you know, in closing, when you talk about also communities as well, one of my biggest things is that a lot of these corporate companies, if I've worked for corporate companies, as a lot of us have, you know, they do have, you know, money and opportunity to help communities. And 98% of the time when before I work with them, I ask for an assist to be able to help me in the initiative of helping communities. So when I like Tillamook, for an example, a year and a half ago, reached out to me and wanted to know what they could do as I was, you know, putting out meals for World's Kitchen Kitchen and helping a lot of community kitchens here in Chicago. And they donated money and product so that I could help a soup kitchen here in Chicago. You know, and so those things mean a lot to me when I pair up with companies, not, you know, just for recipe acumen and their product, but being able to help, you know, communities too, because they have the outreach to do that, which is super important to me.
You know, we just did a big dinner for World Central Kitchen up in Boston. We partnered with Sam Adams. And
nice.
Sam Adams is actually brewing Ukrainian beer now. The proceeds are going to go to, and we partnered with Gordon's Food Service, who gave us, you know, our product that we needed. And I mean, dude, we raised almost $60,000 for World Central Kitchen. It was pretty awesome. So
that is man, correct.
Yeah, man, we're real proud of that. We're real proud of that. But yeah, kind of along those same lines. And if it's charity, they'll help out. And what a great way to meet companies too. You know, if you're doing charity work, it's a great way to kind of get your foot in with the door of them, right?
Absolutely. Ideal Fish helped us out a lot too.
I was definitely good. Ideal Fish is a fantastic company. Well, listen, Lamar, I know we're running a little long here, buddy. I apologize. I know the boys have a couple of questions for you if you got another minute or two.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Jeffy, why don't you go ahead, buddy?
Yeah. Hey, man. I was just wondering, like, what do you have coming down the pike? Are you like, you have any like show ideas that you're like working on, or do you have anything cool like that, or something that's like you shot some pilots? Like, what's the next thing for Lamar on TV? Where are we going to tune in to see you?
You know, I don't have anything right now. I've had a few conversations. I think people are, you know, really, really trying to, if we can even say, getting out of COVID or lack of
yeah.
word.
Yeah.
to re-pivot, you know, with what we're doing with COVID. I don't have anything going on right now. I've been driving the heck out of restaurants like crazy. And like I said, and to a plum point, I've been doing a lot of traveling, but you know, TV's been kind of quiet. It was a few opportunities for me to do some local TV stuff besides, you know, me doing demos on TV. I don't have anything media-wise for that coming up either. It's been pretty quiet. Anything I've been doing is, like, through, you know, my sponsorships. So, like, one of my big ones is with beef because I work with National Beef Association. And yeah, yeah. I have a big, like, summertime barbecue. I think they're going to turn into a live video where people can stream in, from my understanding. We're still trying to put the logistics together, but you know, as like I did in Mohegan, you know, I really enjoy beef and working with beef, and you know, I work between two sponsorships in that because it's beef, and then I also am sponsored by Certified Angus Beef, which I carry a lot of meat through them, so it's able for me to kind of bridge both gaps and do some fun stuff on stage and doing a lot of video and media content for them. But right now it's been pretty quiet, man.
You know what's so funny about what you're saying? It was just so, 'cause I just got reached out to by some people doing that new Gordon Ramsay show. The Next Level Chef show or whatever, and they reach out to really? Me, and you always talk to them, always take the meeting, always talk to them, but this is what happens now. Literally after a 5-minute conversation, they're like, oh, you know, for lack of you shortening it up, you're too established for this show. That shit happens nonstop. It's got to happen to you too.
Yeah, well, you know what though, to be honest, the crazy thing is that it was for a while, and I think because I've done three cooking shows and one social experiment, I think people know enough of it. So I don't get that now. To be transparent, over the last year, I actually auditioned now to judge, and I think that people have put me in that companies that put me in those categories of like judging competitions, which I did, again, something else I never thought about. And I was like, oh, well, then in that case, then why don't I compete unless it makes sense? So to your point, it's like you do at what, and that's the difference. Like I started looking at, you know, what I've competed on, and I'm like, okay, if I compete again, does it make sense for my experience and what I've done already on TV? You know what I mean?
It comes a point where like it's almost not good for your brand, for you, you know?
Exactly. And so then you look at judging, like, okay, well, that's a different lane, you know. But then, you know, now you're premature in judging. But then you look at, you're trying to then understand what it is they're looking for when it comes to judging, because it's like, well, do you want experience? And then if they do, they kind of got experienced people all over the place that we kind of see very redundantly in a lot of these, you know, shows. How often are they looking for new faces, and what is it that's setting you apart to be a part of their new face? You know what I mean? So it's crazy.
You're awesome. I love it. Dan, what you got for him?
All right, Chef. I got so many questions.
Keep it short. We're running late on my man.
I know, man. You're a great conversation. I love everything you got to say. Just some of the things I know you got going on. You got so much from all the things you've did from day to day, from beginning to end. What comes down to for us as chefs is finding that thing outside of cooking, outside of food that we love so much. And I'm curious, what is the thing for you? What is something, like for me, I love comic books and working out. Like, do you have something that you go to that you're outside of cooking realm that like settles your mind and you know, you got any backstory on that?
Yeah, man. I'm a gym rat, so I go to the gym. I try to stay as healthy as possible. I love bike riding. I think when I lived in California, it made me, you know, want to do it more. I do it a lot here because I stay close to the lake. I love music. I grew up in it as a kid. I used to play the piano a lot when I was little. I don't really do it as much anymore. Like, my older brother plays the drums. And so I think a lot of chefs are kind of geared towards music anyway, because it keeps our hands moving and our minds, you know, going.
Yep.
So it's stuff like that, you know, keeps me, you know, when I'm outside of the kitchen, you know, trying to have some balance when I do get back in the kitchen.
Chef, you're awesome, man. We appreciate you, man. Seriously. We got to have you back on the show. We got to have you come do some events or hang out. I don't know, man. Whatever we're doing from now on, Jeffy, we should call Lamar and see if he's available.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Brother, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for taking some time and hanging out with us tonight on the podcast. You're awesome, brother. Seriously, I wish you all the best, most success. Can't wait to see you again soon, brother. And, man, I look forward to it, man. So thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
Yeah, same here. Likewise.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Chef. Woo!
Chef Lamar Moore. Chef. There he is. Woo! Thank you, Chef. We appreciate you. There he goes, boys. Chef Lamar Moore. What a great conversation. Enjoy talking to him. What a good brother he is, huh?
Inspiring.
Super inspiring. His Instagram is amazing too. What's his Instagram, Dan?
His Instagram at chef_LJM. It's not just food talk. He got a lot of stuff going on.
Dude, so positive. I was on there just watching his reels for like 5 or 6 minutes. Like, he's like, just, he's hilarious. He's hilarious. Yeah. Like, he's always dropping some funny ass shit. I don't know. Definitely check him out. Go follow him right now if you already don't. He's the man.
Yeah, we appreciate him so much for being on the show. Had a great time with him on the stage at Mohegan Sun. That's why I was dying to get him on the program. Glad we did. Look forward to the future. Do something fun with him, too. For sure. No doubt about it. By the way, boys, I talked to Chef Bun Lai the other day. How about that? We were texting back and forth a little bit. He wants to hang out soon.
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that guy. Bun's dope.
Yeah, that dude's awesome. Good
dude, he's... I want to do one of his workshops so bad. I just don't have the time, but I want to do it. I want to, like, go camp and stay on the farm and, like, fucking hang out. I think it would be dope.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
You got them 2 weeks off in June.
You call Bun.
Mm-hmm.
We could
bring Olive.
You know, I'll tell you what, man. It's funny as chefs, though. Yeah, we listen to Chef just talk about kind of, you know, as his career is kind of just, you know, getting moving, all the things he's doing, working with companies and building his name. Same thing here with us at Plum Love Foods and Chef Plum and moving the brand forward. But, you know, there does come a point in time where your brand gets to the point where it's, you know, it's so big, it affects so many people, and everything you say, everything you do matters so much. It can affect so many different people, and I think Mario Batali found that out the hard way, guys. I mean, his trial just ended this week. Jeffy, I know he was your guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I love Mario. I think he's great. And he was acquitted, so, I mean...
Kinda. Like, yes, he was acquitted in the trial, but they paid, like, 10 people $700,000.
Sure. It happens.
I wasn't sure how long we let the music play there.
What are you trying to say? OJ's not innocent?
OJ waited for the statute of limitations to go by and then wrote a book that said, I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how.
Yeah, he's speculating. He had a lot of time on his hands. Think about what he would have done.
Stop it.
Hey, he was trying to bring a man down.
Here's the thing about Vitaly. That world was a different world. And I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying that that's how things should be done. All I'm saying is that, you know, listen, I grew up in a different world in the industry too. And, you know, it's definitely changed for the better now, for sure. But it was just way different years ago. Not even that long ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. It was a very, very different place, Jeffy.
Super different.
I don't know what you want to say.
Back then, shit was... Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
I was trying to chime in, but I mean, it was, but it wasn't. Like, you got to understand, I don't know. I'm always thinking of, I'll flash back and think of things that I did, and I'll be real. Like, I probably did things I shouldn't have did. Like, that's just what it is. Like,
right.
Yo, I apologize. Like, I feel terrible for it. Honestly, I don't even know. And I'm not saying I did anything serious, but even the little things, the comments, the jokes, like some things you're like, oh man, you know, and you don't think about that. And it's right. Now it's time for reflection and understanding that those things are inappropriate. And you have to be a man. You got to stand up for it and be like, hey, you know, I can't do that. Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, understand, you can't be that despicable person. There was like this kind of like glamour in that at some point within the 80s and 90s, and it wasn't just chefs, it was people around the world. Like, that's what it was. It was just this macho mindset that came with that. I don't know where it came from, if it was like the hippies. I'm not going to get into the history of it, but I'm just saying. I'm sorry, I got to break down into it, but that's what it is.
Holy shit. Yo,
holy I'm sorry. Shit. I'll get into history.
What the fuck just happened?
Because you know. Got some shit that I actually, like, my daughter's going to protest down in D.C. Like, I get into the history of it. Like, I understand. Like, human interaction, something that I did. And also with the sexual harassment thing, as far as, like, at work, like, I have to deal with it all the time. Like, I'm constantly telling people, like, yo, you can't say that all the fucking time. And it's aggravating. Like, it's, you have to, yo, some people are having jokes within themselves. Like, even two people alone in a corner can't converse amongst themselves because somebody might hear it. And it's a weird, like, kind of element to be in on a daily basis. Totally. And it's just, you know, that's where it comes from. I understand it. I'm there every day.
I just have to do something really quick, if you don't mind, boys. Our resident hall monitor, Dave. Boston Dave, aka Davey Soft Serve, is joining the program. Dave, you're sending all these. How are you, buddy?
What up? How you guys doing?
You're sending nonstop text messages correcting all the stuff. This is radio. We do the short form. No one's coming to us for news. We don't have to be 100% right on everything. We're just getting the conversation out for the last 5 minutes. That's it.
Okay. I like to play the role of PR, be like, that one's wrong.
I was getting to the point, well, before Dan went on a Danalogue, I was actually getting to the point of how the brand gets so big that it gets to a point where it's not even affecting the, you affect the people you work with by what you do outside of work. That's where I was going, Dave, just so you know.
Oh, 100%. I agree with that. You can't be a douchebag outside of work and not affect the people that work for you.
Listen, I don't even curse on social media anymore because of that. Like if I'm tweeting or Instagramming, if I'm on doing a video, I might say something. But generally with that, I don't, just because you never know who you're going to offend. And it's one of those things, man. I mean, listen, yes, Vitaly was acquitted. The charges were dropped, but they did settle with a bunch of other people. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, you know he did that shit.
Well, yeah, he probably did. And listen, back in the 90s, I did things at work that probably weren't appropriate either. But, I mean... Jeffy, you're with me. That's just the way it was.
Yeah. Listen, it was definitely a different time. Listen, I think everyone was trying to have fun. And I personally, like, we talked about this earlier. There was guys that were like really disrespectful in the kitchens that I worked in, we tried to keep it like light and fun. And if someone was like not having a good time, like no one would push it and try to like hurt them or make them upset, you know? But it definitely, there was a lot of sexual connotations thrown around. There was a lot of like,
but you work so you know, close to people all day long. I mean, you just get really close to them. And you get very comfortable. I mean, what
dude, my sous chef used to grab my balls constantly. Yeah. Right, more than my wife.
Dude. Hey, yeah. Jeffy, come here. My hands are cold.
Yeah. To in Mexico. No, not even like that. He would just like walk over and be like, hey, bud. And like, just like cut my nuts. I'd be like, what are you doing? But we were like, you know, practically lovers. We worked so much together. It was crazy.
I mean, that's a little weird. If he's like, hey, bud. And just, I mean, we should call Petrella. Maybe he should make a movie about that.
It was consensual. I wasn't mad at him.
Speaking of which, his movie's number one on Netflix right now.
Bro,
he's killing it. He's our father.
Yeah, our buddy Michael Petrella, his new documentary, Our Father, is on Netflix right now. It's number one, apparently. And didn't somebody say he's number four in the world right now or something?
Number five in the world, yes, indeed.
Oh, my killing God.
Nice.
Yo, killing it.
Dave, have you watched it yet?
For a day.
I love the speaking of balls transition.
Dave, have you watched it yet, Dave?
No, I just saw the trailer for it today. I'm like, holy shit, so I'm going to watch it pretty soon. Probably my next day off, actually.
It looks creepy as shit. I haven't watched it yet either. I know Dan and Jeff have, but I haven't yet. I look forward to it. But hey, we're proud of our friend Petrella. Give it for a shout out to Petrella right here. Hey, man, we love you, buddy. So happy for you. Hey.
Michael Petrella.
Creepy ass movie.
He's going to be on the show soon.
Yeah, he's on next week, actually, talking about the movie.
Sick.
Yeah, he's come on and talk about it. Unless he tries to big league us, but I don't have a big picture of that happening. Dan, what do you think?
I don't know. I doubt it. He's the dude. He's cool as fuck. I love that guy. I was hoping to get him on the IG Live, talk about it. Let's shout out.
He probably isn't. I mean, I think he's in L.A., actually.
Is he? Good for him. That's awesome. So dope.
Yeah, make sure you check it out. It's called Our Father. It's a nice family, wholesome movie. It can't be. Have the kids come in, make some popcorn. Everybody sit down together. Check it out. Our Father on Netflix by our friend Michael Petrella and Lucy. I can't remember her last name, but anyway, it's a great movie. Apparently, Jeff, you saw it. What are a couple words on it without giving things away?
Compelling. Kind of like fucking. I don't know. It's very emotional and invoking, like the whole thing. It's just like you try to put yourself in those positions of what these people went through. And you also try to like understand. I mean, some, not really. It's just like, you know, like you said, I don't want to give anything away, but there's definitely like some weird, like Jesus shit and some other weird, like fucking, I mean, it's just weird in general. I mean, the fact that this guy, I mean, we know the premise of the movie. He's like the father of like, you know, upward of almost 100 children.
Good God.
You know, not consenting. You know, none of the women that he impregnated with his semen were consenting.
We left a big part out there, Jeffy. He's a fertility doctor, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, he put it in a syringe, but he wasn't like, hey, I'm going to go in the other room and get this ready for you. You know, he just did it.
I mean, we never said that he was a fertility doctor. You were like, this woman that he impregnated with his semen. And Dave was like, oh, that's how it works.
No, if anybody knew how it works.
Dave knows. You don't pee in him, Dave.
Yeah.
That's right. Dan, without giving anything away, what do you think? Good movie?
So I knew a lot of what the story was and was still so blown away by it. Like, it was incredible. You know, scene for scene, the story was told beautifully. Like, it plays out in this way that keeps you going. The count kind of keeps going. And as these numbers go up, you're just like, boom, another one. You're like, oh, shit. And then boom, another one. You're like, oh, my God. And you're like, boom, oh, shit. Yo, you're ducking and weaving all these crazy, like, situations. You can't believe it can get worse. And then you're like, oh, shit.
This dude's a problem. I can't wait to watch it. Our Father on Netflix. Yo. My friend Michael Petrella, friend of the show, Michael Petrella, good brother. We're very good proud brother. Of him.
Fantastic show. Fantastic show. Yo, Michael.
Oh, shout out. My shout dude, out. I'm with
my
it.
My dude. Yo, love it.
Well, there you go. He'll be on the show next week talking about it. We'll have a little preview. Maybe we'll play a little clip of the movie. It'll be great. Dave, I don't want to hear any shit from you about copyright rules and things like that. We play clips of the movie, all right?
You know, I can't help it. I'm gonna text anyway, so just be ready.
Jesus, Dave. Jesus.
What?
Your name's not Jesus. Don't say that.
I didn't mean it like that. But
all right. Dive bar, Dan, tonight. Dive bar, 15 minutes. What are we doing?
Absolutely, 15 minutes. Come check us out.
In 15 minutes, or it'll be 15 minutes long.
Both. If that's what it comes down to. Yo, listen. It's all about having a good time. Dive bar, doing it big. Shouting out the whole IG, Plum Love Foods Live. Check us out. Go there. Subscribe to the podcast everywhere the podcasts are. And you're going to see us on IG Dive Bar Live
tonight.
There it
is right there. Big shout out to Chef Lamar Moore for joining us on the program. Hey, shout out to you, Jeff, Chef Jeff. We're so proud of you for getting over that sour tummy, my friend.
Yo, sour tummy.
Thanks, guys.
That's right.
My best.
We're happy for you.
Hello, this is Jose Heineken.
My mom.
In the meantime, in between time, we'll see you guys in a few minutes on Insta talking about the dive bar. Next week, Mike Petrella's on the show. Shout out to Chef Lamar Moore. His Instagram, Dan, is what?
At Chef_LJM.
There you go. Check him out there. In the meantime, in between time, friends, remember, food is one of the most important things you have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's make sure we get the time it deserves. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
I'm the tower of power, too sweet to be sour, I'm funky like a monkey, sky is the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.
This is Jose Heineken.